You're listening to the Chicago Football Fantasy Podcast, presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Drive what Dan Hampton drives. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com today.
Hug it, chug it, football!
Hello and welcome to the Chicago Football Fantasy Podcast, presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. I'm your host, John Solly. I'm the senior digital editor here at ChicagoFootball.com. You can follow me on Twitter at JSolly. Thank you so much for downloading us on iTunes and listening to us. We've got two guests today joining us in studio, Chicago Football Fantasy expert, Mr. JC Talent. JC, how you doing today?
Doing well.
And joining us via the Chevy Trucks Hotline, ChicagoFootball.com writer and USA Today's NFC North correspondent, Arthur Arkish. You can follow him on Twitter at Arthur Arkish. Arthur, how you doing?
Excellent. Glad to be here.
All right. The format of the show, if you haven't listened to us before, is in two parts. We're in season-long and DFS, or daily fantasy sports content. A lot of big news on the DFS side, but we're going to start with season-long. We've got news and notes today. A whole bunch of rookie wide receiver injuries popping up. Of course, we know about Chicago Bears. Wide receiver Kevin White out with a shin. We don't know when he's coming back. But also, Breshad Perriman's got a knee. Devin Smith has some ribs. Jalen Strong just got back after missing OTAs. What are you guys doing with these rookie wide receivers in draft? Are you leaving them alone, taking them later, still taking them where you originally were? JC, we'll start with you.
Well, I think each one of them is a unique situation. It's just a coincidence that so many of them are injured. Start with Kevin White. I think... That's a real scary situation because we don't know what it is, and it seems like every day at practice, John Fox comments get a little more foreboding. So keeping in mind that the Bears offense is probably going to be challenged to score a lot of points and the other weapons on the Bears, I think he is a late round flyer at this point. Breshad Perriman's going to be fine. It seems like it's just a little bit of a knee bruise. And I do like him. Devin Smith, he's probably going to miss some significant time, and he also has Geno Smith as his quarterback, so I don't think he's draftable. Jalen Strong is interesting. He recently lost 20 pounds. He looks great in camp. The problem is who's going to throw him the ball. So I think with Jalen Strong, I would be maybe another late-round flyer guy.
All right, Arthur, what do you do with some of these rookie wide receivers that are hurt?
Yeah, you know, rookie wide receivers obviously have the initial hurdle of, just taking that big step to the NFL, and obviously missing time in camp isn't going to help any of these guys. I think JC was spot on. I think it's the increasingly cryptic nature of John Fox's remarks on Kevin White that has everyone concerned. We don't know what the injury is. All the reporters know is that we don't see him doing anything on the sidelines. So his inactivity is a problem. And keep in mind, this is a guy I was concerned about even before any injuries, just because of the jump from West Virginia to the NFL. Adam Gase's scheme is not an easy one to learn. The second rounder in Denver, Cody Latimer, wasn't able to do so last season. So he's a guy that I'm taking a wait and see approach. I agree with JC. He's probably a late round flyer. For me, it's the same with these other two guys. I love Breshad Perriman, but until he shows a little more consistent hands than we've seen, obviously at Central Florida, and then it's kind of carried over to Baltimore. Now he's dealing with the knee thing. You kind of wonder if confidence starts to become an issue. I'm not hearing that from anyone on the scene, but it's always a concern with these young guys who are getting off to slow starts for whatever reason. Devin Smith, he's the third option in a run-first offense with Geno Smith at quarterback. So while I really like Devin Smith, I think his speed can open up that offense eventually. Geno, average deep ball thrower. Geno Smith's got Smith's got the ribs and is expected to potentially miss the beginning of the season. So another guy that maybe you stash, but more likely you're just kind of keeping a keen eye on the waiver wire as we get closer to the season.
Yeah, Devin Smith is completely off my board. I don't think I'm taking Kevin White until I see him hit the field. Like you said, John Fox has been cryptic, and Kevin White is not going to have the whole route tree anyway. So I'm pretty much off White. Perriman's the only guy I'm really considering at this point. We'll move on. The Baltimore running back situation. Mark Trestman, and I think everyone in Chicago shudders at that name, promises Baltimore is going to remain run-focused this year. Do you believe him enough to draft a guy like Justin Forsett earlier than, say, the fourth or fifth round? Arthur, we'll go with you.
You know, I think whether or not we believe Mark Trestman, because, you know, all the Chicago media is going to have some issues there with regard to his credibility from some of the stuff we heard versus some of the stuff we saw on the field. The bottom line is that Matt Forte is a top five fantasy running back last year with Trestman. So I want to be clear. I don't think Justin Forsett is Matt Forte. I think he's a great story and had a wonderful season last year. Has really been able to kind of maximize some of that potential we didn't see as he was a journeyman earlier in his career. But, you know, whether he's a reception beast and you may be in a PPR league or whether you're in a standard league, you're still benefiting from the uptick in catches he's going to see. You're also going to benefit again. Forsett is not the same as Forte, but we're just kind of comparing situations. Baltimore's offensive line is much, much better. And you have to look at the scarcity of running backs around the league. Yeah, I think definitely he's got to still be, if not one of the top 10 backs off the board shortly thereafter, which I still think would put him in the top four or five rounds for sure.
JC?
I really do think they'll run the ball. I think John Harbaugh is going to insist that they do. I think Forsett is probably offers tremendous value to fantasy owners because he's not the big sexy name that will come off the first, second round. But if you can get him in the fourth round, I think that's tremendous value.
I think he's a PPR monster, especially what we saw with Matt Forte last year. Moving on, Dallas Cowboys running backs. ESPN Dallas said carry distribution for the Dallas running back situation could be Joseph Randle, 15 carries a game. Darren McFadden, 10 carries a game. Lance Dunbar, 5 carries a game. I hate any sort of timeshare when it comes to fantasy. JC, what are you doing with Cowboys running backs at this point, if that's the distribution?
Well, first of all, I don't think in the last 6 years or so there's been an injury report that didn't include Darren McFadden. the only guy on in the backfield of the Cowboys who's draftable is Randle. I think you have to be careful, though. It's a crapshoot because you don't know who's going to be available. You don't know how successful they're going to be. If Randle winds up being the guy, I think he's competent and he could be tremendous value. But it's a bit of a crapshoot. But I would stay away from McFadden big time.
Arthur, are you dropping any of these Cowboys running backs?
Not yet, no. I mean, certainly there's a bit of concern if this is the plan moving forward, if, there's two other guys vulturing Randall's carries. But it's so early. Here we are on, what is it, August 3rd, August 4th. So I think it's more than anything a situation we need to continue to monitor. Obviously, everyone knows the reason we're monitoring the situation so closely is because of that Dallas offensive line, arguably the best in football. And then the presence of Dez Bryant, one of the premier, you know, deep threats and big play receivers in the game. As long as those elements stay intact, I still maintain that whomever is in that Dallas backfield, even if it is a healthy Darren McFadden, and I know that's been a rare sight, he's going to have fantasy value. So, maybe a little bit concerning, but more than anything, it just means you have to watch the situation a little bit closer. And I know, John, that you feel, you know, Randle is the guy, and I agree, is the guy with the most juice, with the most upside in that backfield. But certainly all these guys, to me, certainly still have a certain level of intrigue.
Yeah, it's really disappointing with McFadden. He's already hurt in camp, by the way. Seriously, the guy has a lot of talent, and when he's around, he will vulture carries. But boy, I just banking on him to be around is just it's a long shot.
Yeah, McFadden's a late round flyer at best. Like you said, Arthur, Randall's kind of my guy this year, but if they're going to timeshare, I think I got to drop him at least a round or two. Our next news and note, Sam Bradford is, quote, the clear number one at Eagles quarterback early on, according to NJ.com. Arthur, are you moving him up at all if he's the clear number one?
Well, yeah, you know, I think it probably is time to start thinking about moving up Sam Bradford a little bit. Yes, it was pretty obvious from the get-go that this was going to be a two-horse race. Obviously, there was no Tim Tebow real possibility here. But you look at what they've invested in Bradford. They're picking up the last year of that rookie contract, which is, certainly sizable. He's in a contract year. You look at what's happened in recent seasons under Chip Kelly in Philadelphia. He had the Nick Foles breakout in 2013. You had Mark Sanchez actually at times looking pretty capable last year. So, and Bradford's more talented than both of those guys, in my opinion. So I think this could be one of those perfect situations. He's entering the right staff. He's entering the right supporting cast. They've got Nelson Aguilar. They're excited about Jordan Matthews. They're going to run the football first and foremost. So, I think it's time to start looking at Sam Bradford. For me, he's not a guy that I want as my QB1, but I think he's probably one of the more attractive QB2s that you're going to want, particularly if you're rolling the dice on someone with some injury or some regression concerns. So Sam Bradford's a guy that I'm definitely excited about in fantasy.
JC, is Bradford one of your top QB2s now?
Yeah, I think that's about where I would put him. You know, if he's healthy and he plays the whole season, he could be pretty productive. If you wait to draft a quarterback later, he would be a good choice as a backup. I mean, I guess I have conflicting thoughts about the Eagles. Number one, I'm not buying what Chip Kelly's selling. And you have to be very careful drafting any Eagle other than the quarterback, because if you had LeSean McCoy last year, you realized that Chip Kelly can play a lot of games at the goal line. They spread the ball around so much, almost to the point of absurdity, that it's tough to take any Eagle. But the quarterback, almost all points go through the quarterback. So it's a very intriguing pick, and I think a top backup in a 12-team league is about where he belongs.
Yeah, that's about where I've got him. We'll move on to the next thing. Michael Crabtree, there's a name that hasn't been fantasy relevant in a long time, but he, quote, looks like a star at Raiders camp, according to the San Francisco Chronicle. JC, is Michael Crabtree worth a late-round flyer?
Yeah, sure. I mean, they've got a developing quarterback there. Of course, you also have Amari Cooper, who's probably going to be the number one guy. But, yeah, absolutely. You could do worse than to take a – there's always one or two veteran receivers who wind up returning to form later in their career, and he certainly could be one of them. Certainly a very talented guy. So, yeah, late-round flyer, sure.
Arthur, you taking Crabtree late?
Yeah, I'm in as well. I mean, you have to remember Michael Crabtree was a former first-round pick, so the pedigree is there. He's a guy that should be looking like a star at this point. Obviously, it didn't pan out in San Francisco for various reasons. He wasn't able to stay healthy. The quarterback play wasn't consistent enough. And as JC alluded to, Amari Cooper, and I know you're hearing a lot about him, and if you're not, you're going to hear that he is the real deal. They've just put the pads on in camp, but I can tell you for a fact that the Raiders could not be more happy with the early returns, with the first impressions of Amari Cooper, and that can only bode well for a healthy Michael Crabtree. So this is, and another thing you'll hear often here, if guys are in contract years, we're going to let you know, because there's really no greater incentive for these players to bust out. Crabtree, a perfect example, signed a one-year, $3 million deal, and you know he's a prideful guy, a former first-round pick, wants to turn his career around. I think he has a chance to, and if it's not going to cost you anything more than a late-round flyer, as you said, I don't see what the harm would be.
Yeah, there's speaking of Amari Cooper, there is a vine out there that just went out yesterday. It's all over social media of Amari Cooper just deking whoever was marketing, whatever corner was on him. I feel so terrible for that corner, because that vine is out there everywhere. Cooper looks like a star just a week into camp. We'll move on to our last note here, and this is just kind of a fun one. Geno Smith, New York Jets quarterback, zero interceptions so far in camp. I know it's only been a couple of days, but here's a fun question. Would you rather draft Geno Smith or Jay Cutler? Arthur, you first.
Well, John's idea of fun is clearly very different than mine. But, you know, I'll give you another fun stat. Jay Cutler, as we're taping here today on Tuesday, the Bears off day, has also not thrown an interception in training Ooh. Camp. So this is something to monitor. Now, of course, we've heard this before with Cutler. He's on the fifth offensive coordinator, and every year is supposed to be Jay Cutler's year. But what separates him from Geno – well, there's a lot of things that separate him from Geno Smith. He's a more established starter in this league, as much you know, ridicule as he does face. We know what he is as a fantasy asset, and that's as an upper tier, as a high-end backup. So while I'm not ready to slot him as anything higher than that, I'm certainly not considering Geno Smith over Jay Cutler at this point. I know there's been a lot of people jumping on the Geno bandwagon this offseason. I'm holding off on that. I had some serious doubts coming out of college. I haven't seen anything to change those in his first two seasons. So I need to see a lot more there. And while I need to see a lot more from Jay Cutler too, obviously, I think he's the better asset of the two.
JC, I know you're not drafting either guy, but if you had to.
I was going to say, is there a third option, including death? yeah, you know, I would take Cutler. Geno Smith hasn't really shown anything. Jay Cutler's had some decent seasons. I personally think he will have a fairly decent season this year, sort of probably rank somewhere in the early second half of quarterback, somewhere around 17 to 21. And I don't think Geno Smith will. And I also think Geno Smith could wind up losing his job this year. So Jay Cutler.
Yeah, I think I got to go with Cutler, but man, I like you. I'm looking for the exit. I'm looking for a third option anywhere on that. That'll wrap up the season-long portion of the podcast. We'll move on to the Daily Fantasy Sports or DFS portion. Big news this week in the DFS world. DraftKings, about 10 days after FanDuel released its big NFL Week 1 contest and salaries, DraftKings went out and doubled FanDuel's $5 million guaranteed Week 1 prize pool with a contest that sends $2 million to the winner as a part of a $10 million guaranteed prize pool for Week 1. They also released their Week 1 salaries, and this is, DraftKings says it's the biggest week fantasy football contest in the history of daily fantasy sports. I couldn't find a bigger one, so I'm inclined to agree with them on that. It's the $10 million Millionaire Maker, $20 entry fee, $2 million to the winner. If you finish second place, that's okay. You walk away with $1 million. Here's my biggest concern about that. It's the pool size. It's 572,500 lineups in that. That's gigantic. I can't think of a bigger contest than that. You've got to hit everything absolutely right if you want to take home that $2 million. Now, the good thing that DraftKings did do is they capped the multi-entry. If you're going to go out and enter a whole bunch of lineups, they cap you at 500. So some of these huge DFS sharks can't go enter 10,000 lineups and basically try and buy their way in. So that's a good thing. But, man, I'm concerned about the pool size. Arthur, I can't remember a bigger contest than that. Can you?
Well, no, not at all. Certainly not in the early stages of the DFS explosion. And, I think you certainly hit the nail on the head, because it's not a mystery why they're able to up the ante on FanDuel with regard to the prize package. It's because of the number of entrants, of course. And you just said it, you're up around, 600,000. So if you're going to play this DraftKings Millionaire Maker, make sure you're also going out and buying your lottery tickets. But, it sounds like great fun. I have to ask, because I just heard you mention it, the big-time DFS sharks who are inclined to put in a bunch of entries at a $20 entry fee and a $500 cap, are there people that are really this all-in on this that are going to go spend a grand to play in this contest?
There will definitely be a handful that are going to go put in 500 entries, and it'll be nothing to them. So you will definitely see a couple of guys. The one that in the DFS world that immediately comes to mind is Max Delaray, who is known for multi-entry, but he is going to put out 500 lineups, and we'll see what he can do. But I personally think that it's going to be one entry that wins this. It just seems like what DraftKings is going for at a $20 entry point. So we'll see. But we will move on to Week 1 matchups. Something that we're going to do here when we do talk DFS is rank versus price, kind of looking at individual matchups and then where they're ranked in their price. So the scoring system to keep in mind when it comes, we're specifically talking DraftKings here. A passing touchdown is 4 points. 25 yards passing is 1 point. You get a bonus for a 300-plus yard passing game. That's 3 points, interception minus one. For rushing, a touchdown is 6 points. 10 yards rushing is a point. 100-yard bonus is 3 points. You get a reception, that's 1 point, and a fumble lost is minus one. So we're going to give four players here for JC and Arthur to rank at each position based purely on matchup, and then we'll sort of compare that to price. So we look at the quarterbacks first. JC, why don't you rank these four guys, and then Arthur, go ahead. Quarterbacks, Aaron Rodgers versus the Bears, Andrew Luck at Buffalo, Ryan Tannehill at Washington, and Matt Ryan versus Philadelphia. We'll start with who's got the best matchup to the worst matchup.
Traditionally, Aaron Rodgers just carves up the Bears, and so I think you have to put him number one, with the caveat that there's not going to be any tape on the Bears defense in the 3-4, but they have a severe lack of talent, and they've got a lot of 4-3 pieces they're plugging into a 3-4. The Packers know what the 49ers did, and the Packers practice against a 3-4 all the time. So I think Aaron Rodgers in Chicago is the number one matchup. You have to go strictly just based on on Andrew Luck's ability and that offense that they put together in Indianapolis. I would rank that second, although I think Buffalo's defense is probably going to be improved. Third, I would go with Matt Ryan. I believe that's home versus Philadelphia.
Yep.
So that would be third. And nothing against Ryan Tannehill. I actually think he's a good quarterback, be right up there with Sam Bradford as one of the top backups in fantasy football on a season-long basis. But that's sort of a pop gun offense. I could see that game being 20-6 Miami. I don't see that, you know, being a huge offensive production. So that's how I'd rank those.
Arthur, how about you?
Yeah, I think I'm on board with JC's rankings. I will say I had to think a little bit longer about the Luck versus Matt Ryan, and it was really a matchup thing more than anything. Andrew has to go to Buffalo, where one of the league's best defenses is, and it'll be without Marcell Dareus. I think that gives him a little bit of a boost. And then, of course, just looking at Luck's fantasy resume last year, I guess would kind of give him the edge there. But you have to remember Matt Ryan is going to visit the NFL's worst pass defense a season ago. There's likely going to be a rookie corner playing for Philadelphia, Eric Rowe, I believe. There's going to be opportunities there for Matt Ryan as well. And of course, they're playing at home where they have quite an advantage in Atlanta. And then Ryan Tannehill obviously is going to be of these heavy hitters listed here is going to be really a distant fourth. But I like JC, I remain excited about the Miami offense and Ryan Tannehill's prospects for this year. I just think a lot of people are sleeping on the Washington defense, which is going to be better than most expect.
All right, so you guys both have it ranked Rodgers, Luck, Matt Ryan, and Tannehill. We look at their prices, and this is specifically to DraftKings. Rodgers is going to be the most expensive on DraftKings in week one at 8,600. Luck is the second most expensive at 8,300. Matt Ryan is the seventh most expensive quarterback at 7,500, and Tannehill is ninth at 7,400. I think Ryan is probably the best value out of the four that we've listed. Great matchup, and he's not going to cost you as much as Rodgers. He's going to save you actually $1,100. So I think if you're looking at week one prices of the four guys we went over, Matt Ryan, great matchup, cheap price. I think you could do a lot worse than Matt Ryan against the Eagles defense. We'll move on to running backs, and we'll give you four guys here. Again, rank their matchup. Matt Forte versus the Packers, Adrian Peterson against the 49ers, LeSean McCoy versus the Colts, and Jonathan Stewart against the Jaguars. Arthur, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I think it's LeSean McCoy by a pretty large distance. You remember what happened to the Indianapolis Colts in the playoffs last year. You remember what has happened consistently to that run defense for, gosh, what feels like a decade or more. They didn't do anything to... it was an interesting offseason for the Colts. I don't know if anyone's going to stop that offense, but unless they've got Frank Gore playing defense, I think they may have some issues. So McCoy has to be first for me. I think it's going to be really exciting, the unveiling of him and that new offense and with the team that clearly values him. So I'm going with him first. Matt Forte, I'm going with second. I just think Chicago's new run-first offense, their defensive concerns, what better way to try and keep Aaron Rodgers off the field in week one as this 3-4 defense is still finding its footing than just feeding Matt Forte as much as you can for a back approaching his 30th birthday. He's going to be healthy to begin the season. Obviously, health isn't normally a concern with Forte to begin with, but the offensive line will be healthy. We couldn't say that by the second half of week one last year. So I think the arrow's pointing up on that run offense in Chicago. Adrian Peterson, him being third here is obviously is interesting, of course. There's so much excitement about Peterson's return, but going out to San Francisco, one of the few things I expect San Francisco to still be able to do is play run defense, and I think you don't know what to expect with Peterson after the long layoff. I think he'll have a big year, but maybe there's a little bit of rust he has to knock off. And then Jonathan Stewart is bringing in the rear against the Jaguars, so that is also telling given the talent of the first three guys, because Stewart's a guy I like a lot this year, and I'm not really all that high on the Jaguars defense, but I just think given the context of the list you provided, he has to be fourth here.
All right, JC, out of the four here, Forte, Peterson, McCoy, Stewart, who's got the best matchup in week one?
Well, I thought I was going to go against the grain here because I also have LeSean McCoy number one, so I agree with Arthur. I think he'll really be looking to bounce back. I think he's going to get a lot of touches, and I think he's going to want to prove that 2-3 years ago, that was the real LeSean McCoy, and last year was an anomaly. The only thing I had a little different than Arthur is I have Adrian Peterson at number two. I think the 49ers are going to be a train wreck. They've half their defense retired. I just think he'll run wild in San Francisco, and it's hard to – we're just so accustomed to thinking of the 49ers of having this really tough defense. I think we're going to have to adjust our perceptions this year. Third, I have Matt Forte. I agree with Arthur. I think they'll really try to run the ball. take some pressure off Cutler, also try to keep Rodgers off the field. I think that's a good matchup. And I have Stewart bringing up the rear just like Arthur did.
All right, so you guys both have McCoy first, Stewart fourth, and then flip-flopping between Peterson and Forte at second and third. Here's their price. Forte is going to be the second most expensive running back at $7,800. Peterson, the third most expensive at $7,700. McCoy is the seventh most expensive running back at $7,200. And Stewart's 14th at $5,800 in a great matchup against the Jaguars. So McCoy might be, I think, our best value based on matchup and price. He's not going to cost you as much as Forte or Peterson, and we think he's got a better matchup. So if you're playing on DraftKings in week one, according to JC and Arthur, LeSean McCoy may be somebody worth looking at. And again, our mission here with DFS, we're not sharks. We're not, you know, amazing experts when it comes to daily fantasy sports. We want to try and make it a little less scary. So we're going to do a little bit of this each week. Just look at a couple of matchups, look at rank, look at price, maybe try and find some value for you. So that'll do it for the DFS and the entire portion of the podcast. Don't forget to get all of the best fantasy football news at chicagofootball.com from our fantasy experts and listen to our podcast each week as we get you prepared for your drafts and help you win throughout the season. We'd also like to mention that our podcast is now available on iTunes, so please head over there and subscribe if you like what you hear and never miss an episode. Of course, we want to thank our sponsor, your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. The Silverado 1500 is the highest-ranked large light-duty pickup in initial quality by J.D. Power in 2015. Drive what Dan Hampton drives and visit ChevyDriveChicago.com today. A big thank, as always, to Arthur Arkish as well as J.C. Talon. Our producer today was Dan Mott. I'm John Solly. For all of us at Chicago Football, we hope you have a great day, and we will see you next time.